Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. A new show opens today at the New Museum, which has been a long time in the making. The renowned Nigerian-born curator Okwi Nwezor, who lived in both New York and Munich, had been planning the exhibit for years. Titled Grief and Grievance, Art and Mourning in America, the show spans three floors of the museums and features work by 37 artists. Here's how Nwezor characterized the show. Quote, "The exhibition is devoted to examining modes of representation in different mediums where artists have addressed the concept of mourning, commemoration, and loss as a direct response to the national emergency of black grief. With the media's normalization of white nationalism, recent years have made clear that there is a new urgency to assess the role that artists, through works of art, have played to illuminate the searing contours of the American body politic." Nwezor is known internationally as a curator who brought political works and works by artists of color into the rarefied spaces of the art world, including such monumental exhibitions as 2015's Venice Biennale and Documenta 11 in 2002. I say was because he passed away on March 15, 2019, before finishing plans for this new museum show, but not before he'd asked New York-based artist Glenn Ligon to serve as an advisor. Ligon, along with advisory team, and a team that included Mark Nash, Naomi Beckwith, and Massimiliano Gianni, saw the show to completion and ensured that the final result adhered to the ideals that Nwezor had set forth. With me now to talk about this powerful show that reveals the concept of mourning to be a complex political act is artist Glenn Ligon. Hi, Glenn. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Allison, for having me on. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Well, I'm so happy about both. From the description I read, it's clear there were real-world events that Nwezor felt needed a response. What did he want to address when he first started to conceive of this show?
Well, I think it's interesting that I would say that he actually started to conceive of this show before many of the events that have sort of roiled the United States had happened. I think he was thinking about just the climate of sort of reactionary politics that he saw arising in the United States, even with Obama's presidency. But I think he was also talking to artists and thinking about what artists were making. And so a lot of the work in the show, I think, shows that, you know, artists have been dealing with these issues over a number of years, not just in the last, you know, year or 2 years. So I think he was responding to that. You know, an exhibition is sort of like a feedback loop. You know, you start thinking about an idea, you talk to artists about it, they talk to you about it, you know, and it grows from there. So he wasn't, you know, sort of illustrating an idea with artworks. He was really thinking through artworks, trying to figure out what he thought about the subject matter, the exhibition.
Obviously, he passed away before this international awakening to brutality endured by black people, an awakening that occurred for some people, after the video of George Floyd being killed, one in a long line of violent acts, and also before the insurrection at the Capitol last month, featuring flags and sayings that have been around for decades. So we have this grief and grievance right here that we've seen in the past 12 months so clearly. But I want to know how the show addresses the longevity and persistence of these two themes.
Well, one of the things that I noted when I was first talking to Okwi was that the earliest works in the show that he was insistent on including were two paintings, one by Jack Whitten called Birmingham from 1964, and one by Daniel LaRue Johnson, Freedom Now, also from 1964. Now, we think of, you know, these works as abstract paintings, and you'll see them, you know, online, or if you actually get a chance to see the show, you'll see these works. But embedded in them, in the Jack Whitten, for example, is a photo of a black civil rights marcher being attacked by police dogs in Birmingham in 63. And in the Daniel LaRue Johnson, there is a button that says Freedom Now. So I think, you know, one of key things about Okwi was thinking about is how artists who are dealing with abstraction were also dealing with social justice or troubling the line between abstraction and figuration. And they were doing it at the moment when these events were happening. You know, Jack Whitton and Daniel Ruth Johnson's paintings were made in 1964, the height of these civil rights protests. And I think that was a touchstone for him to think about how artists have been always engaged with the struggle for social justice.
My guest is Glenn Ligon. Grief and Grievance, Art and Mourning in America is at the New Museum. It is opening up today. So you have dual roles. You have a piece in this exhibit, but you also took on a different role as well as an advisor. Can you describe your role in realizing the exhibition, and then we'll talk about your piece?
Well, you know, Oakley, I think it was in fall of 2018, Oakley emailed me and asked me if I could talk to him about Grief and Grievance, the show he was working on. And I said, I'm happy to talk to him about it. And then it became more formalized. He asked me to be not an advisor, he asked me to be an interlocutor, which I guess what that meant was he was at the time the director of the Haus der Kunst in Munich. And I was living in Brooklyn, and I sort of felt like he wanted me to be his eyes and ears on the ground, you know, in the United States. So that dialogue happened, you know, starting around March, winter of 2018. I didn't realize how ill he was. So, you know, one of our last conversations was in Munich. I came to his hospital bed in the mid-March or early March of 2019. And he literally is being wheeled out to get radiation treatment. And it's like, Glenn, I'll be right back. Mm-hmm. And half an hour later, he was back. And we spent the next 7 hours talking about this exhibition from his hospital bed. So this was 2 weeks before he died. So he had this incredible sort of focus and was constantly thinking about the exhibition and all the other projects he was working on up until the end, you know. So my role became, you know, after he passed away, I was asked by the New Museum if I would continue working on the show with them. And so I gladly, you know, said that I would do that.
And tell us about your piece.
Well, that's, you know, it's the largest piece I've ever made. It's called The Small Band, and it's a neon that's installed on the facade of the new museum, and it has the words blood, bruise, and blues in it. And it's got a long sort of origin story, but basically it's about a case called the Harlem Six, where these black kids were brutalized in Harlem in the mid-60s and taken to a police station. And one of the kids says in testimony after this event says, I had to open my bruise up to let some of the bruised blood come out to show them that I had been beaten. And I got very interested in that, you know, blues as an art form, but also, you know, bruise as a word. And he makes a little slip between when he says bruise blood, he actually says blues blood. And I started thinking about the connection between the blues, between bruising, between blood, you know. Ralph Ellis, the novelist, said that the blues is personal catastrophe expressed lyrically. So there's always been a connection between the blues and pain and suffering and redemption, too. So that's sort of the origin of that piece. But as a curator or an advisor on the show, I had some hesitation about, you know, including my work in such a prominent place. And so went back and forth about that for a while. But what really convinced me was an artist friend saying, you don't think about yourself, think about whether not including that work would compromise the integrity of Oakley's vision. And so that was the thing that convinced me that I should go ahead and let that piece be part of the show.
What was your concern about it being part of the show?
Well, because I'm a, you know, working as a curator, so I didn't want people to think that, you know, I just decided I'm going to put my giant neon on the facade of the building, you know. It was actually Oakley had decided that, Actually, Oakley had decided that without even telling me. So when we first started talking about the show, I had no idea, you know, that he wanted to use that piece. And it was really only after he passed away that that became clear, you know.
It was meant to be. My guest is Glenn Ligon. We're talking about Grief and Grievance, Art and Mourning in America. It's at the New Museum. You have an essay in the catalog in which you write about Inwiser's interest, Oakley's interest, in the role of abstraction. Would you be willing to read that excerpt, a brief excerpt?
Sure. He's Oakley did a show of British Ghanaian artist named Frank Bowling. And so I discussed Frank Bowling's work in the context of my essay. And that paragraph says, while Bowling certainly positioned his practice outside of what he considered decentralizing debates around the nature of black art in the United States in the 1960s and 70s, Oakley sees in Bowling's work proof of the, quote, the idea that abstraction need not be disunited from content, especially as it intersects cultural experience and historical subject matter, unquote. Oakley's discussion of blackness and abstraction segues into an examination of some contemporary artists in whose non-representational work he claims, quote, the climate of blackness is everywhere. These artists who, like Bowling, are, quote, mining blackness's abstract possibilities, unquote, think through abstraction as a way to explore a multivalent conception of blackness and, following Christine Sharp, anti-blackness, one that shifts and morphs, acting more like climate, like weather.
Why do you think abstraction can be a tool to address black grief?
Well, because grief is abstract, you know? Mm-hmm. We all experience it differently. We all mourn differently. It takes on different forms. And I think somehow abstraction is able to hold these sort of various forms. I mean, if you look at the work in the show, there are many, many different kinds of abstraction in it. You know, the paintings of, for example, Lorna Simpson, which are figurative and abstract, or, you know, Jenny C. Jones' work, which are these incredible drawings that she calls a score for blackness, or Kara Walker's work, one of which is directly referencing Charlottesville and the protests there, the sort of white nationalist protests there, but it's also dedicated to Oakley, you know. So there is this sense of like our grief over events like Charlottesville, but also our grief about this individual person that we all knew and loved.
I understand there are three cornerstone works for the show. What are they, and how do the works play off of each other?
Well, the cornerstones, I think, are, you know, what I talked about before, Jack Whitten's Birmingham, Daniel LaRue Johnson's Freedom Now, but also Basquiat. I think the painting that Oakley was really interested in was a Basquiat painting of the death of Michael Stewart, who was a black graffiti writer who was basically murdered by the police. That's the painting that he was really thinking about for the show, but it had been in a sort of large, important exhibition at the Guggenheim fairly recently. So we decided to go with the painting that is currently in the show, the title of which I'm forgetting, but an amazing Basquiat painting of basically like four sort of underworld figures, these black shadows being sort of drawn to a figure of a black man holding up a skull, and sort of the idea of the presence of the afterlife in the present, you know. So those three artists, Basquiat, Jack Whitten, and Daniel LaRue Johnson, were in his mind. But of course, there are lots of other artists that he had long relationships to, you know, Julie Moretti, Mark Bradford, Charles Gaines, etc. So I think he was, you know, ever expanding, you know, his vision for the show from that initial kernel.
The show's catalog has writings by Ta-Nehisi Coates, Claudia Rankine, Judith Butler, and Claudia Rankine's piece details how in 1955 Emmett Till's mother made the decision to have her son displayed in an open casket, demanding a public grieving and an awareness of her son. And she writes, "Mobley's refusal to keep private grief private allowed a body that meant nothing to the criminal justice system to stand as evidence." Goes on to say, "The spectacle of the black body in her hands publicized the injustice mapped on her son's corpse. Let the people see what I see," she said, adding, "I believe the whole United States is mourning with me." Mm-hmm. How do we see echoes of this in the show?
Well, I think we see it in work like Dawood Bey's Birmingham Project, where he photographed kids who were the same age as the four little girls that were killed in the Birmingham church bombing, and photographed them with adults who would have been, I guess, kids at the same age, at, you know, during the church bombing, and sort of older now. So I don't know if I'm explaining well, but adults who, if those kids had lived, he photographed adults that would have been their ages, but he also photographed kids who would have been the age of those four little girls, and juxtaposed them. So they're diptychs. So you see a young boy or next to an older man. And there's mm-hmm. this strange, uncanny sort of, because Dawood picks very well who he's putting together. So even though they're not related at all, these two people, somehow you feel like you're looking at the younger and older version of the same person. Mm. And so it's about this idea of not memorial. There's no pictures of the four little girls who were killed in that bombing, but the idea of lost possibility, you know, that these were lives cut short. And so this idea of mourning is in that photograph series so beautifully illustrated, I think.
The name of the show is Grief and Grievance, Art and Mourning in America. It's at the New Museum. My guest has been Glenn Ligon. Glenn, I am so glad you're a listener, and I hope you'll become a more frequent caller.
Thank you so much, Alice.
And that is all of it for this hour. I'm Allison Stewart, and I will meet you at the top of the hour.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.